For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, a reminder to subscribe to it and to our YouTube channel if you don't already, and also please send lots of cash because I've just adopted a large dog and she gets through a lot of kibble. Oh, and if you're on YouTube, also check out our new thanks button. And I'm also here with a jolly good show to viewers in London, England, who've made it number 4 on our list of all-time views by city as of June 2024 when we started this feature. So keep calm and CDN on, even if your current government holds disastrously wrong views on climate. And if you're keeping careful track and wondering where number 6 and number 5 went, well, as I was checking the top cities, I noticed that the first and second spots were total and cities, which means that everybody that we already thanked now also gets raised up 2 pegs and thanked again. And, speaking of disastrously wrong views, our top story this week, courtesy of the Manhattan Contrarian, is that for all its apocalyptic rhetoric, the Biden administration accomplished amazingly little on the climate front. Unless you count spending huge sums and imposing vast, unproductive regulations, which we don't partly because of the Contrarian's point that, quote, in the big picture, whatever emissions reductions have been achieved have mostly resulted from substitution of natural gas for coal in electricity generation. This substitution would likely have occurred by natural market processes without any of the government subsidies and credits for wind and solar power, end quote. So, they didn't even deliver the greenhouse gas reductions, let alone the promised improvement in the weather. And in fact, they didn't even succeed in building useless green infrastructure. In one particularly laughable case, Biden's people allocated $5 billion to install between 1,000 and 1,500 electric vehicle charging stations in underserved areas, especially rural ones, to make such charging stations, quote, as easy to find as gas stations are now, end quote, according to the ex-president. And by 225, they'd actually built 58. And this pattern of grand promises, big spending, and feeble results is beginning to wear on the people who keep having to pay the bills. Consider this story out of Australia. Quote, employers supplying food to major supermarkets and thousands of cafes, restaurants, and pubs have launched a revolt against Anthony Albanese's energy policies, urging Labor to dump its 82% renewables target and focus on ramping up more gas and coal production to bring electricity prices down in the short term, end quote. A similar situation, speaking of London, exists in Britain, where historic pubs are closing amid skyrocketing energy prices. And what really sticks in our craw here at CDN, and we think in that of voters as well, is that the pain the authorities are causing is coupled with a Kilmange de la Brioche insistence that renewables are now secretly cheaper, and you're just imagining that gnawing pain in your stomach and your wallet. And this brings me to our bafflement at how people so often believe the next shiny promise from a government, any government, despite its feeble record on competence. And in this case, I'm talking about the strange way in which, after Donald Trump made disagreeable noises about Canada, Canadian politicians who've been running the place down as colonial, even genocidal, and invoking martial law against truckers and their horrible Canadian flags, suddenly wrapped themselves in the same flag and declared that they loved the energy sector they'd been running into the ground and the nuclear power they'd shunned. And it's very strange how a man they deride as an idiot can make them so much smarter so fast, but they couldn't do it themselves on their own. And how the same people who couldn't deliver a green energy transition are now sure that they can both bolster traditional reliable energy sources and deliver a green energy transition. But not humility or consistency. For instance, Chrystia Freeland, who was long Liberal Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's loyal finance minister and deputy prime minister, until she discovered that his loyalty ran one way only, suddenly promised to, quote, seize the opportunity to make Canada an energy superpower, from powering our grids with hydro to exporting liquefied natural gas to our allies, end quote. Say, would that be the same LNG that Trudeau told Europeans who were waving cash at him for it, that there was no business case, and Freeland nodded and clapped when he said it? Oh, and Freeland rival Mark Carney also suddenly realized that he didn't actually support the carbon tax he long supported. Instead, he now thinks, or briefly thought, that it made sense to hammer things like steel production with carbon levies because normal people don't buy steel. But as Steve Ambler wrote in the Financial Post, quote, it is inconceivable that Carney, who has a doctorate in economics from Oxford University, is unacquainted with the theory of tax incidence. He surely understands that taxes imposed on big polluters will ultimately be paid by consumers, end quote. So apparently, Carney just thinks we're dumb. So dumb that we believe he can tax carbon so heavily that we stop using fossil fuels without piling costs on consumers and while building a coast-to-coast strong economy as an energy superpower. And as Carney continues his triumphal march toward coronation as Canada's Liberal Party leader and Prime Minister, institutions continue their shamefaced march out of his net-zero banking alliance, with Canada's largest, the Royal Bank, joining all our other major banks in fleeing the wreckage. But this time for sure. In the newsletter, we also deride a New York Times list of this year's Super Bowl commercials from best to worst, in case you didn't see them, so you'll have no idea anyway, or you did see them, but want to be told what to think by your betters. The Times critiques the ads for avoiding controversy at the expense of lacking creativity, and then it gives 10th spot to a Science Mums ad about how climate change will wreck her baby's world before she finishes college. Oh, that's bold and original. And the Times also ran another very unoriginal weepy piece on how, quote, writers have spilled a lot of ink on the question of whether it is ethical, desirable, or financially advisable to have children in an era of accelerating environmental crisis, end quote. And the answer turns out to be, yeah, it is, provided you feel good about dooming them. Nothing to do with the facts, just about what's going on inside your navel. Oh, and as the snow piles up outside the window, we repeat our irritable suggestion that efforts to downplay severe winter weather would end with them telling us there's no storm. For instance, outlet after outlet bellowing, in CDN's particular words, quote, swaths of the U.S. may be grappling with frigid weather, but for the planet as a whole, heat records are being obliterated, and it spells very bad news, end quote. Yeah, it does. Just not the way they think. Including this Nevermind Cold Snaps item, quote, code red alert issued as temperature soars to almost 50 degrees Celsius, end quote, in South Australia. And evidently, quote, these temperatures are the hottest seen at this time of year in the region since 2007, end quote. But back then it was hotter. Okay. Meanwhile, Heatmap offers, quote, one weird trick for getting more data centers on the grid, end quote, which consists, evidently, of them just switching off the machines briefly during peak demand hours. So, the solution to a government-mandated power shortage is darkness, as the solution to collective farming creating food shortages is to eat less and be happy. It's so simple. Why didn't we think of it? In the newsletter, we also note that the latest plan to make sure we remove enough CO2 from the air to kill off the plants and then ourselves is a proposal to set off an ultramassive hydrogen bomb off Antarctica, some 81 gigatons, something like 1,600 times more powerful than anything humans have ever exploded before, in order to, quote, pulverize billions of tons of basalt rock on the ocean floor, triggering a natural process that sucks carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, end quote. Yeah, that'll show that stupid nature that's sequestering carbon slowly via calciferous sea creatures and creating a famine of CO2 over millions of years is for amateurs. We'll do it in a flash, so to speak. Of course, this might sound like just one crank, but alarmists are surprisingly interested in geoengineering ventures, and some are even blasting ahead. No, not the conspiracy theories about governments and vapor trails. The one where private people are actually releasing balloons full of sulfur dioxide or dumping things into the ocean, hoping to cause tipping points that are good ones because some kook figures that it might be so. Decarbonizing even has its own Wikipedia entry. And it's such an obsession among alarmists that the New York Times Climate Forward is fretting, quote, will there be enough power to pull carbon from the sky, end quote. To which the obvious answer is, no, of course not, because the reason humanity is releasing CO2 is that it comes from far and away the most efficient way of generating power. So, you'd have to use all the power that we generated, and then some, to undo it, unless instead you'd care to repeal the second law of thermodynamics. Which they might try. And something called the Climate Portal at MIT also enthuses about geoengineering. So, it turns out that net zero is just the beginning of our effort to wreck the climate and bring back the glaciers. What could go wrong? In the newsletter, we also note that anyone who spends much time in public policy, of any sort, not just climate, soon realizes that radicals and revolutionaries tend to share a malevolent hostility to the normal enjoyment of life. including, with dreary regularity, picking Valentine's Day to tell us that we're killing all the chocolate, the flowers are killing the climate, and so on and so forth. Roses are red and planet-destroying, they spew pollution, and we're annoying. Thank you very much. Also, in the spirit of the minister who read the Bible and the New York Times each day so he'd know what both sides were thinking, we're happy to share with you a new review paper by the famous James Hansen and 17 others that tells us again that the science is all completely settled and, for the most part, much worse than anyone predicted. Though curiously, they do suggest that talk of tipping points is overdone, before warning that we're hurtling towards several of them. And they also warn against hysterical rhetoric of the Antonio Guterres variety, they specifically name him, before trailing off with stale rhetoric about the commitments of the youth of today, the need for governments to invent wonder technology, and, quote, that young people not be prohibited from having knowledge of the potential and limitations of purposeful global cooling in their toolbox, end quote. So, that's what they're thinking. What we're thinking is, when in doubt, look it up. And our entry for this week in that series notes that given the babble from people like UN Chief Marxist Climate Alarmist Guterres about a code red global boiling gates of hell crisis, you'd think that the number of fatalities from natural disasters, including weather-related ones, must be soaring. But instead, courtesy of Our World and Data, the average number of real-world fatalities per 100,000 people by decade looks like this. And when you break it down by drought, and by floods, and by other such things, well, we apologize to those looking to ruin the next holiday because, unfortunately for you, the world is getting much safer. Now, to be fair, in those numbers, death from extreme temperature does seem to be increasing. But, first, we don't know if these are deaths from extreme heat or cold, and second, we don't know if perhaps it's just better counting. But in any case, the solution to this problem is better heating and air conditioning, both of which require inexpensive, reliable energy. And the right, bright solution to scary sloganeering is to look it up. And speaking of bright, a new study, hat tip to the friends of science, says that over the past 40 years, the amount of solar radiation at the land surface in the European Union has gone up. So, the continent is getting brighter literally, if not figuratively. But strangely, from 1983 to 2002, the reason was declining aerosols, very possibly due to closing filthy Soviet factories and to stricter EU rules. But after 2000, it's different. It's because cloud cover began declining. And nobody knows why, least of all those vaunted computer models. Which also don't seem to know what we keep learning from the CO2science.org archive, namely that, plants grow better with CO2. Including sweet cherry, or Prunus avium L, on which from 1994 to 1999, 8 experiments found, on average, that an extra 300 parts per million of CO2 in the air boosted cherry growth by nearly 60%. So, bake those cherry pies in a natural gas-powered oven, and it'll be win-win all around. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I have no more faith in the competence of the government than I do in its benevolence. But I have got faith in the benevolence of our audience, especially when it comes to helping me feed my dog.